unless you had been.
All right.
Hey, when you got back.
As am I.
Should be okay.
Special Monday night edition of the Sunday night cheer. Very exciting. It has to do with the TV contract. We have to do some of these sometimes also. I wanted to talk about, we're talking about general based in issues. It's funny, whenever I find myself in a different Chur community and the issue of it comes out that I'm involved in based in, it's inevitable I'm going to get hit with one of two questions, right? Question number one, which we're not talking about, is why do you cover up for child abusers? That's that's one welcoming question I get. The other one is, why do you keep on doing this to the Agunas? So I'm going to deal with the second one, why I keep on doing it to the Agunas. Why I defend the child abusers will have to be for a different time. The
next week.
Right. Well, actually, no. I'm counting on this being a two-part series. In the first part, and tonight I'd like to talk about, just give a background to understand what the issue is. Right? Basically, the view that many people have is that there are bad men in the world who take advantage of women, and the rabbis, if they wanted to, could do something about it, but they just don't feel like it because the women are girls. So therefore, that would be the summation of the popular press take of the Aguna crisis. I think I'm going to go for a little bit of a deeper understanding tonight, see if we can do that. Let's start with the very basics. The first, most basic issue is to understand divorce. So the Chumash tells us, a good source to start with, Ki ikach ish isho ba'ala, v'haya im lo sim sachem ve'enav, ki matzo ba'er v'zdava, v'kosa la sefer krisos v'nosam v'yada, v'shilcha me'beso. And it should be that if a man marries a woman, and he is not she no longer finds favor in his eyes, because perhaps she was sexually immoral. In that case, he should give her a get and send her away.
Rabbi, if she's sexually immoral, then...
So we will discuss, well, what does it take? Is that what it takes? Is that there has to be ki matzeh by erva stava? That's a machlokes. It happens to be source number two, so you don't have to wait that long even. So, well, in fact, we'll do it right now in our review. So, okay, the Mishnah says in Gittin, what does it take to get... for a man to rightfully divorce his wife. Mishnah Beit Shammai Omrim Lo Yigarish Adam Es Ishto Elam Kein Matzo Ba'Ervas Davar. Anything short of her being unfaithful, a man should not divorce his wife. Shenamar Ki Matzo Ba'Ervas Davar. That's what it says in the pasuk. If that happens, then you should divorce the wife. But if it wasn't Matzo Ba'Ervas Davar, you don't do it. This is the opinion of Beit Shammai. Beis Hillel says, however, Beis Omer afilu hikdicha tafshilo, even if she burns dinner, that's reason enough to divorce her. Shenamar ki shenatzba yavas davar. That's all you need. If Kiva Omer afilu matzah charetz nahimena, Kiva says, I'll go one step further. Even if he found a better fish in the sea, that's reason enough. As it says, v'haya imosim sachem ba'inam. If she no longer finds favor in his eyes, he can take someone else. This, of course, is not marriage counseling, right? This is a matter of what does it take to halachically be able to divorce your wife. And obviously, we don't pass them like Beis Shammai, right? Therefore, in terms of we would call it modern day law, no fault divorce. You don't have to prove that one of the parties was unfaithful in life. Really, a get can be granted for pretty much any reason, it would seem.
Yes. My question is, if she's unfaithful...
If she's unfaithful, he has to get rid of her. He has to get rid of her. In these other cases, though, if he has witnesses which indicate she was unfaithful, then halachically he has to divorce her. But that's not the usual case. But you see from here that really what it takes to trigger a get is not much. Again, we don't support this. Right? We wouldn't recommend it, but in order for the person to have a right to do it, it's very low. And it also, it seems very much that this decision is being made by the man. Why is that fair? Is that right? Well, it's interesting. When it comes to getting married, it's the man who put down the money, right, to, shall we say, purchase the wife. That we don't really
I was going to say, you want to keep hold of that.
He's special.
Right, no, meaning that he initiates the marriage, right? And therefore, logically, the person who initiates the marriage should be able to initiate the divorce. And that's what the Chumash says. Whether you agree with the logic or not, that's the halacha. Right? And that's clear in the Torah. Now, the under traditional Torah law, a few things are obvious and some things may not be. So one thing that is true is that a man was not limited to the amount of wives he could have. That polygamy was allowed by the Torah. The polygamy still is allowed by the Torah, truth be told. Right? However, there came a point where Rabbeinu Gershon or Hagola came forward and said that this will no longer be allowed. Why was it allowed? Why is it not allowed? So again, if we were to be Dorshei Taima Dekra, if we were giving the reasons for the Torah, it would seem that in ancient civilization, a woman who would not have a husband would basically starve to death. Right? Women were not hunter-gatherers or the like. And therefore, it was necessary for a woman to be married. Men went out. Men fought wars. Men were involved in dangerous occupations. There were attempted to be more women in the world than men in the world. So therefore, in a case like that, polygamy really makes good sense. Nowadays, I think there are more women in the world than there are men, but not that much more. 50.5% to 49.5%, something very close outside of China. So that being said, it obviously didn't make sense anymore, and with that, they stopped doing this. Got your back. So, Rabbeinu Gershon came forward, and the first thing he said is that polygamy was no longer allowed. That's rule number one. And again, that we'll discuss that a little bit. And then there was a second, that Rabbeinu Gershon had many takanas. Right? If you open up the Encyclopedia Talmudis, there's a list of 22 takanas. Really, only three of them ever got much press. One is no polygamy. Can we name the other two? Don't read other people's mail. Uh-huh. Correct? What? That's number two. And what's number three? Number three is relevant to us.
Didn't he say that women have to accept divorce?
Correct. Number three is that nowadays the woman has to accept the divorce. Does that mean beforehand the woman did not have to? A woman could get divorced against her will? So if Shatter assumes... What? So if Shatter seems to be of the opinion, not so much. If Shatter said that a man could never force a woman to accept a get... However, nowadays, you just added, if you do that, there's also a cherem for doing it. But just like reading your mail, probably was someone else's mail was not allowed prior to Rabbeinu Gershon coming along. Rabbeinu Gershon came along and said, not only isn't it nice, but there's going to be a cherem with that. So too, in this case, he added on that there is a cherem with that. Now, these two takanas, to a large extent, not 100%, level the playing field. Yes. A woman can't force a man to give a get, but on the other hand, a man cannot force a woman to accept a get. And previously, you don't want to accept a get, that's fine, I'm just going to take a second wife. That's not an option anymore either. So going back, you know, for centuries, the playing field has been relatively level. And just like there are agunas out there, there are also uguns out there. You don't get the same press, but there are men out there whose wives refuse to accept a get, and based on that, they can't move forward.
What would the percentage of that?
Yeah. I don't have. It's interesting. There's a famous article I was reading before this. It was written by Rabbi Yitzhak Breidowitz. You know him? He's also known as Professor Irving Breidowitz. He was a rabbi for many years in Baltimore. He was a law professor in the University of Maryland. He now lives in Israel. He teaches in Arsameach, I believe. And in it he wrote, how many agunas are out there? He said, the estimates range anywhere from 50 to 150,000.
Well, 50, like, period, or is it like 50,000 to 150,000?
50, period. And he brought down sources for both of them. He actually...
And the other way?
What?
The other way?
So the other, that's why, again, once I have so no idea how many, there's no I'm going to know the other way. It's very hard to put numbers on any of this. You know, it's interesting. He quoted the source for 100, he said that there was an article written in the Village Voice where they said 15,000. Then the New York Times quoted it as 150,000. Right? He said that's what happened. And there was a book written on the topic where they said 50. The book was written by a fellow, Mendel Epstein. Anyone know the name Mendel Epstein?
Yeah.
Yeah, who's Mendel Epstein?
I still know his name. I have no idea
who he is. Mendel Epstein is the person who was recently arrested for beating up men for not giving Gittin. He was arrested by the FBI. So he was the primary source.
That uncovers that.
Mm-hmm. What?
Highly reliable.
Well, on the other hand, it's very interesting.
He's vested.
You say what you want, but the guy who clearly was supporting the women.
Right.
In a very real way. And he was saying it's a lower number. He's someone who was clearly very involved in the process. I would give his numbers more credence than I would give the New York Times, 150,000.
And what was his number?
50, in terms of that. Again, you think about how many Jewish couples, how many couples have Jewish marriages, right? It's hard to imagine that there are 150,000 agudas out there.
What about Israel?
So again, we have one of the most. I can tell you that the RCA Beis Din is perhaps the most active Beis Din in America in giving gittin, and we do. Want to guess how many we do a year? Too many is correct. Be more specific.
200.
So again, on a good. I don't know what we call this a good year or a bad year, but around 300 a year. 300 a year. Interesting. In 2008, with the financial crisis, they did 200. There was a significant drop because of the financial crisis. You know, just worth noting.
Does Epstein's five have 10 or 40?
10. 10.
50. The number 50 seems unreasonably low.
Yeah.
Because of natural crises, for example, after the Yom Kippur War in Israel.
So we're not talking.
One event like this could create 30 agudas.
So again,
you know?
September 11th caused 10. 15, actually. 15 on the high end. Right? So again, and thankfully this doesn't happen on a yearly basis. When we're talking aguna, I should make the point. It's a good point. The Gemara refers to an aguna. The original aguna had nothing to do with this. The original aguna was a woman whose husband just went missing. He went off to war, he went on business, etc. Right? He didn't have email, he didn't have a cell phone, he didn't have a GPS tracking device, and he just went missing, and now she's stuck. That's the traditional. That is rare nowadays. It's more common in Israel, unfortunately, than it is in America. More unfortunate that it's more common, not that it's less common here. Right? But again, and there are situations, like obviously Israeli wars unfortunately produce. 9/11 did. According to Leah Shalashudis, this week is the 20th anniversary, I guess, of the Argentinian.
'91.
So again, that caused several agunas. Truth be told, but these—that's when we talk about aguna. What I'm talking about here is not that case. My case is: here's a woman; the husband's right next to her. He's just a jerk. It's got nothing to do with he's missing anything. That's just what it is. But that's what we're talking about now. So, unclear what they are, but now the playing field is somewhat more level. It's not totally level because there are still some important differences. One important difference is what if the person violates the law? What if the person does not get a get and goes on and gets married anyhow? So in the event that the person is the wife who does this, well... There's the death. Well, there's a few issues. One is the death penalty to consider, right? Two is mamzerim, right? That's a biggie as well. And those both do not apply by the man, right? Because biblically he's allowed to do it, and therefore the children are not mamzerim.
So get a heter mea rabbanim.
The next difference is the mea heter mea rabbanim. So let's take a look at number three and get a little idea of what is this heter mea rabbanim. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us early on in Ibn Ezra, Rabbeinu Gershon Hichrim Ahanosei Al Ishto Avol Biyavano Lalehikrim L'Kein Varusa. He says, so the Shulchan Aruch takes a little bit of a more laid back approach. He said, Rabbeinu Gershon said no to wives. However, if my brother dies, for example, and leaves a woman who and then he was childless, I can do Yibam. I can get a second wife that way. That's okay. Right? Similarly, if I was just engaged to a girl, I can marry another girl. That's the way it is. The Ramah, that's the Minhag Sfarad, Minhag Ashkenaz, it's not that way. Im Eino Rotza, Lichnos, El Riftor, Hu Adim B'chol Makim, Shiriz Bichoy, Mitzvukon, Shishoyim, Ishtar, Esther, Shonam, Ol Yehoda. So he says, not only that, the Ramah says, according to this opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, for example, if a man's married for 10 women, for 10 years to a woman, and they don't have children, instead of divorcing her, you can just take a second one.
That's interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. You have to work that out, whether that makes you happy or not.
It's just interesting.
Okay, but given the two choices. On them, however, important, however, Yeshchogim v'svar le'osar le'chem rabbeinu gershon no'ig afil b'mokom mitzvah afil b'mokom yibam. There are people who disagree with the whole thing. They disagree with Yibam, they disagree with Rusa, they disagree with Tanya. Top to bottom, they disagree with us. It's Tarach Lachos. And you have to do Chalitza, you can't do Yibam. You can't get a second wife that way. However, he says, if the guy finds himself in a situation where he wants to give a get but can't, There is a way to allow him to get remarried.
What would that say? He wants to give a get, but he can't?
Right.
What would that be?
So that she's not mentally competent to accept a get.
Okay.
There she is. Alzheimer's, she has. Dementia.
No, I understand that.
Now, the Chalkas Machoke comments on there. There's a little Tez Zion there. So Tez Zion refers you to number 4, which says, Yesh Chalk Latele Yisrael Kvar Nagu Shalom Lahate Abolo Meir Abani. It says, even in these cases, you need what's called a Heter Meir Rabbanim. A Heter Meir Rabbanim is that 100 rabbis from 3 different countries, right, preferably 3 different continents, have to sign off that they agree that this person can remarry. So, that is a very rare case. It's funny. They say it's
impossible.
What?
Say how
basically
possible
makes
is
it
that?
Impossible.
It's not impossible. Rabbi Shechter likes to comment as follows. He says, sometimes the biggest kula becomes the biggest chumrah. He says that it used to be every town had one rabbi. That's it. There was the rabbi. There's Rav Ha'ir.
Yeah, but the towns are wiped out.
Right, and that was it. So to find 100 rabbis, you'd have to go to 100 different cities. So the Sri Deish says it doesn't really mean rabbis; it means talmidei chachamim. You need 100 talmidei. Rav Shechter has comments now. To find 100 rabbis is no problem. 100 talmidei chachamim. Where are you going to find that? There's big kula. It's going to do us in. Yes.
So you say 100 rabbis from 3 different continents. Is that 300 total or 100?
No, it's 100 total.
Oh.
100 total, but they've got to be spread out. So that again, that's only supposed to be used. This idea of hetter meir rabbanim in very rare cases, a case where the guy wants to give a get, etc. He should be giving a get.
But he can't.
Right? So I have in my lifetime signed on Heter Meir Rabbanim less than 5 times. And each time...
Were you one of the 100?
I was one of the 100.
Wow.
100 is not like, you know...
No, but I'm saying, how often does that come up? Apparently a lot.
Right, so the story is as follows. So again, the cases where I would sign is where I would receive, where certain things would have to happen. Again, there's usually cases of dementia or the like. And in all of these cases, there's a panel of rabbis who go and interview a woman to confirm that she's not capable, A. B, there are letters from doctors indicating that they don't have hope that she will recover from the situation, right? 3, in most cases, we ask for letters from the children that they agree that this is a good thing.
I know what's happening.
Right? Also, beyond that, we make him put a get in escrow. If she ever is able, she can collect it. And you have him put in escrow money to support her the rest of her life.
Wow.
So.
That seems fair.
Right, so that's the way this should be done. This should be very rare. If it's a matter of I want to get divorced and my wife doesn't,
that's a different ball.
Right, so that's not something that we should be signing on. I'm sure there are people who know stories about it.
There have been some complaints by women that men have bought, you know, signatures of 100 or 100.
Right.
My mom was just pointing out to me and hear the whole thing, but she set out for the Holocaust, they had this problem.
A lot of women saw their husbands are dead and remarried.
Right. So again, that's right. There are men, that's the other aguna. That's the aguna of you think the man's gone, but he isn't. Right. Again, it's a little off topic, but there was a famous case in Eretz Yisrael in the early years of Medina of Haredi couples who were married, and then the husband shows up, and now these very fine people who were doing all the right things, the kids are mamzerim, and the discussion is there anything that could be done to fix it? Reb Gorin had some interesting ideas. People had ideas about Reb Gorin. There was a lot of lot written about it, but no doubt that those are the worst cases. So Rabbeinu Gershon, Shulchan Aruch says it limits when it's applicable. He has several exceptions. These exceptions are not accepted by and large by the Rama with the case where there's no ability to give or get, and in those cases you need strong checks and balances to make sure that it's going the right way.
What happens if he's demented?
She got a problem.
Which is where it's not level playing field.
Right. Well, right. So again, that's what I'm saying. If there's a very interesting case that we had a few years ago in the basin of a fellow who had early onset Alzheimer's. And what the couple wanted to do is she said, as long as he knows who I am, I want to remarry and take care of him. Once he has no idea who I am anymore, the problem is at that point
he can't give a get.
He can't give a get. Right? So the question is, would there be a way to set up a conditional get that would in fact kick in at the last moment?
Retrospectively.
Right.
Is it possible?
What?
Is it possible?
So it's at least very difficult. Probably not possible to set that.
Should this be the goal from going to war?
The idea is when you give it a get me'achshav,
then you're out. You're divorced.
Right. Here, they say, well, I have to remain married as long as possible.
Well, why can't you do it like the will? A minute before my death. A minute before my Alzheimer's really kicks in.
Right. So because you can't do it by will either, if you remember.
Right.
You have to do it as of now.
Right.
Right. Payable at.
It's kind of, well.
But the indebtedness has to come down. That's why it's always the same problem there exists here as well. So it's interesting. So as the Rabbanim were dealing with it, one of the well known Rebbetzins got up and said, "She's wrong." What did they say? In sickness and health, to death do you part. So he's got Alzheimer's. You're going to walk out at him just because he doesn't know who you are anymore.
Well, there's walking out and there's being forced.
Those are not the
same thing.
It's
Could you have
right.
and it's the guy who says in sickness and
health.
Right.
would transpire with a young woman whose husband was in a vegetative state when she was 24 years old.
Correct. Correct.
Could you get 100 rabbis to do the opposite?
No, you can't.
No.
Because again, rabbis can undo rabbis. Rabbis can't undo the Bible. That's what it comes down to.
I like your thinking.
Right.
The
so then,
escrow doesn't work either. Which we talked about in the other case.
What? Yeah. It's,
the
astronaut. Why? No, for the woman. Right. The other way, you can't set it up. Right. So when I say that there is a basically level playing field, it's not totally level because of the issues that we raised. One is, what if they went and did it? So that's different still, A. And B, these rare cases where, these very tragic cases, there's more leverage, there's more leeway to help out the man than there is the woman. Also, all based on the same idea. Yes.
But if there's possibilities to make an alternate knife, like the woman, if he gives her a get and says, hey, if you go this place, then we're divorced.
Right.
So
the halacha is...
Can you set up that way?
No, you can't, because the halacha is that in the event they live together as husband and wife, at any point, that knocks it out. Again, the entire get's no good. Right? If he's away at war, then you could set this up. But if they're actually living together, then it's not going to work.
I didn't think it seems like an easy way out if you have that system put in place. The whole concept of getting are really, I mean, obviously the Gemara says you can divorce for these things, but we don't hold like that. The reality is if you put in a system where you can just get out because the person is no longer capable of something that's not by their control, then no one's going to want to get into marriage.
Yeah.
Meaning, if the whole,
if it's easy go, is it going to be easy come?
No, but my point is, the person can turn ill within the first year or 2 years of marriage. People would be afraid to get into marriage if the whole Tanai was, I can get out at any point just because the other person...
So you're explaining why the Torah doesn't just let us snap our fingers and walk away from it.
Why don't we just set up another thing like Kurzburg?
Absolutely.
What am I going to set up here? I'm going to sell my marriage to the Beis Din and they're going to take care of it? Yeah, the problem is... I'll sell with my hummus to the guy. You know, I'll sell my marriage.
We're
holding all of our marriages.
So I want to make sure I was understanding you. My husband has got early onset Alzheimer's, and he and I both know what's coming, and I want to stay married. So why don't I get now?
Yes.
And then
that's it.
Well, what if I want to live with him?
So, in the biblical sense.
Yes, sir.
No, ma'am.
Why can't I just live in sin with him then?
Especially if he's.
I think it's that second word, the last word there.
Oh, wait for a minute.
The word is in sin.
Well,
it was a question: can you live with him physically? Yeah, I imagine you could.
No.
I'm not a doctor.
I'm saying,
but it's in sin.
We know
that's a rabbi. We don't know how to do that.
We know the point is coming where he won't be able to know who I am.
Correct.
Why can't I just stay with him until he doesn't?
Isn't there a case going on now? Damn, lawyers in the crowd here. There's a case going on now of a guy who was just arrested for living with his wife, who they said did not have the mental capacity to eat. It was in a nursing home.
There was a case like that.
Right?
Can you wait again and not have to live with
him? He's being tried on criminal charges.
Can you wait again and not have it to live?
Yeah, sure. What are you going to do with it then?
So, but have him write again, have it delivered when she wants it to listen.
No, the problem is if he's not mentally capable, she can't accept it at that point. At the point where she's accepting the get, he has to have the mental wherewithal.
Right.
That's the problem. So we have here, so you have this, you're interesting a few lines that you probably know of elsewhere, right? The Shulchan Aruch says, "Lo hichrim ela ad sof elef hachamishi." He said that this only applied until the year 5000, which means, according to the Shulchan Aruch, for the last 755 years, polygamy was allowed once again. The Rama says, basically, that's the long and short of it, and that's what we own. So that's these are the differences, right? So practically, it's not an even playing field. That's true, and the way it's not even though are not in major ways. Again, it's not even in the what if the person violates it, right? They're both sins, etc. But what the outcome is one major difference. And number two is this Hector Meir Rabbanim can help a man out of a tragic situation, but it can't help a woman out of a tragic situation, right? So that is the imbalance that's in it, right? Which arguably is a lot less than the imbalance that was at the time of the Torah, because at the time of the Torah, a man could always give a get, perhaps. And a man definitely could always take a second wife, and the woman never had that option. For the last millennia or so, it's been much more even. Now, if we look at the Gemara in Yevamos, number 5, it says, Pikeach shenoso pikachas in this charsha. What if a man, normal man, marries a normal woman, and then she goes deaf? Now, deaf, we call a deaf person a cheresh in modern day Hebrew. In terms of the understanding of the Gemara, that may not be a very fair translation. Cheresh arguably means someone that is mentally not capable of understanding.
Like they become mentally ill.
Correct.
The way we want
that's
to talk
it's,
about
that's what it is. Our school will probably tell you becomes deaf. But again, the understanding is that up until 200 years ago, deaf people never had any mental capacity because they could not be taught.
Right?
So therefore, when the Gemara is talking about a deaf person, it's not a matter of somebody who
can't hear.
Who can't hear. Somebody who can't really understand is more what the issue is. So imrotzi yotzi imrotzi yikayim. So if the woman this happens, so he has an option, you can divorce her. Nishtatis lo yotzi. However, if she becomes crazy, but she totally has no idea, if she becomes demented, so then he can't divorce her.
Because she's not capable.
She's not capable of accepting. Nefcharish hu o nishtate. However, if he becomes mentally incapable, lo eno motzia olamis, he can never give again. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, ma isha nischar she yotzos, the isha she nischar she eno motzi. Wait a second, how come I can divorce the person who is, we'll call her deaf? How come he can divorce her, but the deaf man can't give it? Right, that doesn't sound fair. Amlo eino dome ish megarish ish miskaresh. So ish yotzel ritzono v'shlo ritzono, but ish eino motzi el ritzono. So that in order for the person who has to have the make the decision has to be the man, and a woman, she can be the force, even if she's not interested in it. Again, you have here this imbalance.
Well,
but more importantly, we have an idea that a man has to be willing to give it. Right? That's very important. That if a woman's unhappy about it, but she accepts it, the man has to be doing it by his own free will. The Gemara in Gittin goes on to say, the Mishnah actually, get ma'usa, a forced get. This is important. Ben Yisrael kasher, what would the Chachamim possible? If a Jew forces you to give a get, it's a good get. If a non-Jew forces you to give a get, it's not a good get. It sounds like that, however, the goyim can say, listen, do what the Jew tells you to do, or we're going to beat you up, and that's okay. The verse of the of Nachum and Shmuel, again, who's to be Yisrael, kedin kosher, shalgo kedin pasul. That's only if what? This is a case where you have a right to force the person. Meaning that there's a category of people of cases where you can force the man, and in that case it has to be forced a certain way, meaning either a Jewish Beis Din has to force, or the Jews can hire non-Jews to force on their behalf. However, if this is not a case where the man has to be forced to give a get, it's possible. Even if it's done in the right way, if it's not his free will, it's out. So this is important because we see here...
I don't understand the difference, sorry. In other words, if you're bringing in an enforcer, whichever kind, it sounds like he's not willing to give again.
Right.
So when is it okay to force and when is it not okay?
So again, we haven't discussed that. That's what we're saying. What we've said until now is there are limited... Now let's go for this case. Let's say the woman, you know, she's married to the guy, and she decides she's off in Florida and she meets the cabana boy. She likes him better. Right? I want to dump the old man and marry the cabana boy. So, she says, I demand a get. He says, nechtigintug. Not happening. So, can the Beis Din force him to divorce his wife?
Yes.
No.
I have two Italians to beat him up.
Right.
Then he gives the gifts.
Still not good.
That's
still not
good.
If they kill him, then you get remarried. Right?
And what if he's an abusive man and she went to Florida?
So step number one.
Okay.
Step number one, not every man is forced to give a get. Right? That makes sense. And,
yes.
And in fact, not every man is in the wrong, necessarily.
Hard to believe, but...
Okay. So that's what. Okay. So obviously now there are questions where he's in the wrong. So let's say she goes forward and she doesn't have a boyfriend. There's no cabana boy.
She's fleeing him.
But the guy hasn't picked up his socks once. We've been married for 35 years. Every night he drops the socks on the floor. Never once has he put it in the hamper. Every single night we discuss this, and he just ignores me. I'm telling him, put the socks away, he's watching football. 7 days a week, 20 feet, he's always watching football. So I demand a get. Does she have a right to a get?
No.
No, still not. Right? Still not. There has to be a certain level where we're going to demand a get, right? Right? Just, I want someone better clearly night. He never puts the toilet seat down. That's also probably not going to do it. Okay? You know, so the question is, what does it take to force a man to give a get?
Yes.
So that is a different Gemara. That's a Mishnah in Ksubas number 7. Okay? Gives us a list. These are the men who will be forced to divorce. One, Mukeshchin, if he's got boils. Okay? A list, if the guy is a tanner, and he just really smells
Freaks.
Bad, right? He smelts copper. Even if he did it before they got married, it's not like he started doing it now. Right? She has a right to say,
I can't tolerate this.
Listen, I thought I can handle it, but I can't.
These are attraction things, basically.
These are over-the-top attraction. This isn't the matter of, he put on a few pounds since we got married. He likes my cooking too much. This is really limited.
Kind of disgusting.
I will be his to Ima, even if he said, this is what I do for a living. Yechol hishatoma suvura yisi shani yechol lekabel. Actually, I thought I could handle it, but I can't. Sorry. Chomam lekabel is he al karcha, chutz mi mukeshvin, b'neishin ma'akosa. The guy's got like leprosy. She's going to catch it from him. Something like that. It's a contagious disease now. Right? Maisa b'tzidon, v'borsi echa chenes. Once there was one of these guys, tanners, who died. And his brother happened to be a tanner. She can say, I don't want Yibam. I had enough with your brother. Right. So we have here that there is a list of people that can demand a get, and it's not very encompassing. Right? Then we show them add to this list. But, the cases where you're going to force someone to give a get is very, very limited.
Right.
Very limited. Right? So, therefore, in any other case, if you put a gun to his head, literally or figuratively, and the person gives the get is no good. It didn't help you at all to get this get. This piece of paper is worthless.
Right.
In all of my years, I had one case where I was ready to poskin that you forced the guy. And it was an exceptionally tragic case. The case was a young couple gets married. It's very typical modern Orthodox couple. They move to a modern Orthodox community. They have a baby. It's very typical. After 6 months, he has an aneurysm. And he ends up a quadriplegic. Like at this point, she's 26. He's 26. She's 24.
With a little baby.
And she says, I need to live my life. I'd like a get. And he says, you're all I have in the world. If I give you a get, I'm never going to see my kid again. I know it. I'll have nothing. I refuse. She comes to Basin demanding a get. Actual case. What do you say?
What did you say?
Mama.
Mommy. Not mama.
So... That was an actual case because he was a quadriplegic. He was not able to function as a husband. So that was actually a case where we had it within our ability to say, you can force him. Of course, what should happen here, unfortunately, life isn't textbooks. But overall, the ability of an honest Beis Din to say kofin is very limited. So there,
what happened?
They are divorced now.
She got a get.
What? They are divorced. But unbelievably tragic. Unbelievably
that is tragic.
Tragic. Right? So the bottom. What?
Are you going to have the source from a Bainu Talmud that Rabbi Riskin likes to quote about is it going to be on the sheet?
No, that's not from this part.
What would happen in this case again?
What happened in the case is a young man has an aneurysm.
What
he wants to know what the outcome was.
There was a get. There was a get in that case. So.
Is she married?
What?
Is this woman married?
Do you know a guy?
What's
the name?
I'm
relevant.
I'm asking. I'm
curiosity. This isn't something to yend about.
I want to know.
I know you want to know. <That's what
you're laughs> <thinking. laughs> I have my reasons. I have a theory.
Okay.
We have a theory.
You think there was a guy in the wings?
No. I have a theory, if she's not married, it's probably because she forced from this divorce.
Oh my. He's talking karma now.
So the bottom line is, this is a major...
so wrong.
Well, so that's... So, therefore, there are cases where you can force the man. Even when you can force the man, you have to beat him to the point where the person says, I want to do this.
Can you beat him to death? Can you beat him to death?
If you beat him to death, halachically, as far as Ebn Ezra is concerned, that's the best case scenario. Because whether he agreed to death or didn't agree to death, at this point you can remarry.
Right. Right. He doesn't need to get.
Right, that doesn't have to be. Now, why does it make a difference that he says, I agree to it, even though he clearly does not agree to it, right? You take a case of a fellow who's being held by his ankles over the Lee Avenue overpass at the BQE, hypothetically, and they say to him, you want to give a get? You better decide, because I have an itch on my nose, I think I'm going to have to scratch soon. And the guy announces, yeah, I want to give a get. So what did that help at all? Right, so that's the famous Rambam here in number 9. The Rambam says that really down deep, everybody is a good person. But sometimes you just have to beat the Yetzer Hara out of them to get to that good person down deep. Right, so that's the story. Now, that doesn't mean if you beat up a guy randomly and he says, Rotsani, that makes it a good get. No, you weren't allowed to beat him up, and therefore this is a problem. But in those cases, you beat them, and they say... So we said, even though really we have a pretty good idea why he's saying it, right? Really we're saying that down deep, that's the truth. Okay, that's the story with that.
So I don't know if this comes up later, but so you were talking about those situations where you can force a man. So can you give us some other categories?
Yeah, I also mentioned the fact that a man cannot perform the duties of a husband.
Okay.
Right? There really aren't many more of them.
What about an abusive husband?
So again, that's the question. What do you call abusive?
Yeah, right.
And that might, and again, it's interesting because the definition of abusive husband definitely changes from society to society.
Yes, that's
right?
True.
So therefore, it's kind of hard to...
So what if it's a man who beats his wife? Let's take the most...
Every day?
3 times a week. If you're asking me.
Right, again... So again, would you say a man who raises his hand to his wife even one time? I don't think it's a good idea. I'll go for the record and note that. But I'm saying is that these are not...
What if it's happened more than once? Let's say it's not his regular thing, but he's abusive.
Right. Or again, he's a hard. And what if what if he's verbally abusive?
Same thing, or financially abusive,
right.
Or sexually abusive, or, I mean, there's lots of abusives.
There's lots of abusives out there.
That's right.
Right.
So can a woman come and say, I need your help?
Right, so she can come and say that, but we probably can't say Kofin.
Because?
Now, what? Because that's probably not on the list, unless he's abusive, and he's a tanner. Then I'm okay.
He's covered in oils.
Right.
He's covered
in oils. He doesn't brush his teeth. Now we can talk. So...
Doesn't feel like a level field to me.
What?
Doesn't feel like a level playing.
Well, again, if he comes to her and says, my wife beats me, we can't help him either.
Okay.
So that's a level.
Maybe I'm going to call abusive. Wow. What do you call abusive?
So, I have met abusive wives.
I'm sure there are. I mean, I know there are, but the majority of it doesn't fall that way.
Right. That's true. But, in terms of it's a level, whether it happens to affect one more than the other is a different question. What if the woman just comes up forward and says, I hate this guy. He's disgusting to me. I can't live with him. Ma'usalai. Right? So the Gemara talks about a meredes. A rebellious woman. So the Gemara says, meredes mimai. What does that mean? Or ravuna mitash mishamit. I refuse to sleep with this man. That's it. So the Rambam says, Isha shemana bala mitash mishamita. He recrossed Maredes. That's the definition. He says, I refuse to live with this man. Im amra ma'astiyu, vein yachli bala midaiti. If he says, he's disgusting to me, I just can't possibly live with him. I just can't do it. Kofin otol lahotzi l'shaytu l'fish emel kishvu yashutivo l'shaytu will show no love. The woman is not a captive. We can't force her to live with this man. Therefore, we force the man to divorce her, the Rambam says.
So if he beats her, she could just say, I hate him. I don't want to live with
him. Well, let's go beyond that. Let's say she found a new boyfriend. She can also say, I hate him. I don't want to be with him.
So hypothetically, this could be one stand there. Right,
this could be. This could be
one night for that old woman. I hate him. And
Ma'us alai, right? Pretty much every woman that walks into Beis Din in Israel opens up with the line, Ma'us alai. This is the Rambam tells you. Them's the magic words.
Well, this is
the
where
Tate Sebel Ksuba Klal, she's not going to get her Ksuba. You know? But Tito Baloseha, Kayamin Bein Melchas, you discuss financially what she gets to keep, what she doesn't. I'm in number 11.
Then there's no end point.
What do you mean?
If anyone can just come in and claim this.
Right.
Without any proof, without any thought process.
Again, how can you prove it?
Right.
Show pictures of him and hook her up and see what a neurological reaction she has.
No, I don't mean literally proof.
Unless
we can't.
That's right.
It's granted that it's
see which areas are flashing.
Granted it's subjective, but the point is, like I said before, there's going to be a lot of fear of getting married if the whole concept is I can walk out the next day and say, I'm sick of this person. I hate this person.
Yeah, but she's
gonna
lose a pile of cash.
Great, but who's going to sign a contract on the condition knowing that the next day someone can rightfully just say, I hate this person and get me out?
Well, I have a contract that says you're going to pay me 2,000 dinars. And I say, I hate this person. I'm going to walk away and I lose my 2,000 dinars. I mean, there's at least the financial considerations.
Right, so the Shulchan Aruch, though, doesn't really jump in as much as the Rambam. So look at number 12. Yishivana Bala Mitashvish, Hina Chris Morendis. Vashona Sabib Neya Ma Marda. Why? Imra Maas Tiu, Vein Yochel Gribal Lo Midayati. I can't do it. That says why? Skipping over the Ramah for now. Imratza Habala Garsha Eim Ksuba Chal. If the husband wants to divorce her, at that point he doesn't have to pay the ksuba. Now there's a big difference between if the husband wants to divorce her, he doesn't pay the ksuba, and he has to divorce her. So even though the Rambam seems to have opened up the door, the Shulchan Aruch shut it pretty quick.
Right.
So therefore, this is not going to work.
Okay, so this is a good place where the film comes in about Vivian Amsalem.
Yes.
Which goes on for, she says, I can't live with him anymore.
Right.
And
in fact, she uses these words.
Right. And it goes on, and he doesn't follow, he doesn't listen to the rabbis.
So again, let's keep with the, before we get into the fictional case that you're interested in.
Fine.
Right, let's try.
I'd rather have a real case, personally. But
in this case, I wouldn't. I'd rather a fictional get than a real get myself.
It gave
to each their own.
It gave lots of the pieces.
Correct.
Of what
so
happened.
The question is, okay, so now here's the story. So her saying he's disgusting, that's not going to get her an automatic get. Okay, that's on the table. And there's no, unless he's one of these rare cases, we can't force him to give a get. On the other hand, clearly the Torah did not want this to happen, right? The Torah did not want the man to say, you want a get, I would like your father's business now. Right?
Blackmail is out.
Right? Or I want to guarantee you're never going to get married again, as in your case. Okay? That clearly was not what's supposed to be happening.
Right.
Right? What should have happened in a perfect world? So again, in a perfect world, the Beis Din has power to do something about it. The world is not perfect, and the Beis Din is not powerful at this point. So the question is, well, given the new reality, what, if anything, can be done to fix the problem? Now again, if people were moral, we wouldn't have this problem. But that's not happening right now. Okay? It would be very difficult to say that anybody who's doing this has, even though they'll wrap themselves in a, oh, I only want shalom bias, I'm doing it, I'm doing it for the sake of the children, etc. That's total malarkey.
No, when anyone asks for a get, usually, or they
what?
Want out, they're not doing it because they think it's good for the marriage. They're doing it 90% of the time for themselves. The example you gave earlier where he says, I can't live with this person anymore because of the paraplegic. She's doing it for herself. She's not doing it for the sake of the marriage.
So I could tell a story from Reb Moshe Bick. Reb Moshe Bick and the Satmar Rebbe. Chus Yoga and the Laini. So it says, what?
I'm thinking of Paschmanek Shammah.
I do. Like that. When I become one millionth of the Chatam Chacham of the Satmar Rebbe, then I'll say otherwise. So what's the case? So what happens as follows, that Reb Bick made a decision, a radical statement in Brooklyn, 50 years ago or so. We said that a couple cannot get married until they go out at least 8 times. A radical statement. And the Satmar Rebbe was very opposed to this, and he said famously, Katzri b'bnois ches. Right? I'm disgusted by these girls who go out 8 times. That's a sharp line. So the Reb Bick responded, said the difference between me and the Satmar Rebbe is he's a Masada Kedushin and I'm a Masada Gittin. Right, so Zor Shelter, as the saying goes, that it says that the Mizbeach cries when it gets given, sometimes Mizbeach cries when it gets not given. Right, so again, they said that there are many times where what's best for the family is a divorce. Ultimately, is that the best? No. Really, it would be best for a couple to remain happily married. If that's not an option on the table.
You can divorce. The ratios of what goes on nowadays versus what went on at one point is much.
So the bottom line is, right now we do have a problem. Whether it's 150,000, whether it's 15,000, whether it's 50, the number is way too high.
Right.
Right? Again, so I don't really care what the number is, but the number is much higher than it should be because it should be zero.
Right, because no one should be held captive like
Correct. Again, couples could argue one wants to get divorced and the other doesn't want to get divorced. One says, you know, let's try a little bit more counseling, you know. Let's stay together a few more years until the kids are out of the house, you know. One member of the couple wants a divorce. The other one doesn't have to say yes right away. Right? That is true. However, we're talking about cases here where the marriage is dead, no one denies it, and at that point, this should be put out of its misery. And if somebody is immorally, either him or her, holding out, there should be a way of stopping this. So there are various possibilities that are out there. So what if, for example, a guy says as follows. The guy says, I agree to give my wife a get when she demands it. And in the event I don't give her the get, I will give her $10,000. Okay? I promise that I'll do it when she says it. If not, I'll give her $10,000. And now, she demands it. He doesn't want to get divorced, but then again, he doesn't want to pay the money.
I was going to say, that's a weird contract.
Well,
something like a prenup.
We'll get to that.
Okay, that's another.
Because we're going to get to
this. This sounds different than a prenup.
So yeah, but let's say that case. That case is covered, right? I hereby accept to myself that if I act that way, I will accept. Now, here it comes. She demands it. I come to Beis Din, and they say, are you willfully giving this get? And he said, well, not that much. I'm just trying to save $10,000. Is that a good get or a bad get?
I don't know.
So
I just want the get.
So the Rashba says that's a bad get.
Because?
The Rashba says that's kafiyah. You're forcing the person to do it. You're financially forcing the person, and therefore the get is no good. That's number 13.
So
on
can they make him give her the $10,000?
What?
He's forcing himself. No one's forcing him.
What?
Right.
Another, the Tashbait says this whole fight, he brought it upon himself.
Right.
So let me give you another case. Let's say I borrow money from my father-in-law. I borrow $50,000, right? And now my wife wants a divorce. I said, I don't want a divorce. So he says, I'll tell you what. You give me the divorce, I'll be mechel the $50,000. Am I being forced in that case?
It doesn't sound like it.
Right? You're not doing anything for my. I'm just offering you a bonus if you do it. It's not that I'm going to take away from you if you don't.
So that would be okay?
So the assumption is that's okay. That would be okay if I worked it out. Well, so there's a discussion about this. So that really is the background, as the professor correctly pointed out, to the discussion regarding what's called the halachic prenup. Right? So the problem is as follows. If we would just have a thing where the husband says, I will pay X amount of money if I don't give the get when I should, that would really, according to the Rashba, make a non-kosher get. The get would be no good. To give a woman a non-kosher get, you're not helping her.
Right.
Right? So that's not okay. But what about this case? So the prenup is based on the following. And again, I give you the basic overview, I think, in number 18 in the missing T at the beginning of it, the halach prenuptial agreement. Well, there's two parts of it. One part is, in case we're having a fight, we agree to go to Beis Din. That's number one. Okay, that's very good, because that's a start. Number two is as follows. When a person gets married, so he doesn't really promise to love and cherish till death do him part, but what they do promise is certain things. For example, a husband has an obligation to feed his wife. A husband has an obligation to clothe his wife. A husband has an obligation to put a roof over her head. Now, what does that cost on a daily basis? So let's say I had to pay for my wife to go to a restaurant, to go to a deli for three meals a day, where else is she going to go? And a lot of fish and chips this week. And also a motel room, right? And a basic clothing allowance. So let's say it's $150 a day. That's seen as a fair number. Obviously, different communities, different countries.
Cities, right.
But $150 a day adjusted for the CPI.
Let's call it 200.
I'll call it 200. Call it 200 a day. Fine. $200 a day. Now, I'm married to my wife, and I don't have to pay the money now because she lives under the roof with me. I'm going to give her a motel room. She eats the food from the same fridge as me, and she's got my credit card. Right?
So, that seems fair.
Right? So obviously you're not going to charge me for this.
Right.
However, in the event that, God forbid, we should get separated, right, and she's not living under my roof, and she's not eating out of my fridge, etc., at that point, I halachically have to owe her the money. Now, let's say that would happen, and we would go to court and say, my wife says he's got to pay me. Would that stand up in court? Under halacha, he has to pay me. The ksuba says so. So that likely will not stand up in court. Why not?
Why?
Because the guy will say, what's the reason? Contractual?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know that's what it said in the ksuba.
Oh, so now you're ignorant of what you signed.
Man signs a ksuba?
I'm just saying you gave this ksuba.
I'm just saying that I also gave her a ring and yeah, she walked around me seven times. I don't know what that was about. How do you know what this Aramaic thing is about? Some rabbi with a long beard came up and started saying all this mumbo jumbo.
So ignorance.
I smiled.
So ignorance is a good defense here.
I think it's an excellent defense. You know, it just looks like a religious ceremony.
Can I ask a question?
I just did.
How many times have you gone to a website and said, yes, I've signed 200 connections without limit?
Right.
Many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But not
my ketubah.
Right. So therefore, what the prenup does is as follows. So the husband obligates the wife that I will pay you X amount of dollars every day, legally binding. However, this obligation does not kick in as long as we're living together, as halakhically it shouldn't. Now, what happens when the couple separates?
I move out.
And as long as he doesn't give a get, they're still husband and wife. So he's got to pay $200 a day. $73,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
Right? And the only way you can stop this from ticking is
give a get.
So is that financial coercion?
Sort of.
No. If I divorce her, I don't got to pay for her anymore.
That's right.
That's how it always is. That's not coercion.
Okay, then I like that.
Right. So that's the idea behind the halachic prenup. Now, okay, it's not going to work 100% of the time. There are cases where it will not work either because he's fabulously wealthy. And $73,000 a year, no skin off of his back.
Right.
And this time, because he's fabulously poor, and try to collect it. Right? But the 95% in between, right, this in fact is the thing. And again, the idea being is this is not a fine, but rather this is just codifying what's out there.
Right.
There's
another way to codify
So again, so that's basically what it does, is it just, to a large extent, puts the ksuba into legalese, into a point where it'll be collectible. So again, what you're doing is you're allowing the halacha to do what it's supposed to do.
Why not have the chazan sign the ksuba in some manner?
Because again, he always have the defense of, yeah, what's that? Svarim signed the ksuba.
No, I'm saying that would be the same thing in essence.
No, it wouldn't. It would not be binding in American courts. It would not be collectible. That's the difference. So that's
what makes it not collectible in American courts?
If it's written in Aramaic and the guy doesn't speak Aramaic, it's a pretty, as an attorney,
I just
want
to know.
I like my chances with that case.
Okay.
Right? You had him sign an Aramaic.
I want to make sure I understood what you were saying.
I will have my client swear on a Bible that he cannot speak conversational Aramaic. You know?
Yeah, this just raises the question. Suppose you have the ketubah where they have to sign an English copy of the ketubah.
So again, that was the old way they used to do it. And that did not stand up in courts. This is more of an American legal issue than it is a halachic issue, right? So Svaradim sign it, you know, and they put real numbers in it, and still they've over the years separation of church and state. You try to stay away from it. Also, there's the issue of duress. We're not going to let you get married unless you sign this thing. So I signed this under duress. So that's the reason why. So that's where the prenup does help. Up until recently, the Beis Din advertised that there has never been a case where a husband signed a prenup where a get was not forthcoming in due time. Unfortunately, it cannot be said anymore, as far as I know at this point, because of a case that I'm sitting on.
Okay, what's the case?
The case is a couple that got married very young. She is in very low 20s. Marriage broke up after 9 months. Now the guy is missing. There's a rumor he's in Scotland, an unconfirmed rumor, but that's all what anybody knows.
That he fled to Scotland?
Yes.
Okay.
There were serious issues with the fellow, mental issues, and really we've tried very hard, and nobody's forthcoming with his location, and even if he's located, there's no guarantee they could force him to do anything. So the prenup is very effective, but not nearly 100% effective. I said, I shouldn't say not nearly, but maybe nearly, but not 100%. If the guy just ups and goes missing, there's nothing you can do about that.
They signed the prenup?
I don't even remember. But it doesn't really. Yes, they did sign a prenup. Yes, they did sign a prenup. But the problem is,
you
can't
find the guy.
You can't get the guy. Find the guy.
And so, how long is this?
If they find him, what?
It's so questionable whether
they have court orders against him in America and Israel already. You know.
But why don't they try Scotland?
Scotland's a big country, I hear.
So how long is
it?
I don't think it's around enough time then. The airport security, cameras, over there.
So again, assuming that airport security is willing to show you the cameras for this, which is a big exception. So now you know he landed in Scotland. Great. And?
This is where you get the non-Jewish enforcers to bring
you. You gotta find the guy.
Yeah, I got it.
Catch me if you can.
What?
Why is it not just a form of a guna?
She is a guna.
It is.
Yeah. Does it have to
right? So that's the problem.
And so, how long?
Guna is bad.
How long has this been going on?
You have to refuse it something.
No,
what?
When they disappear, they disappear.
That's your
question.
I'm
not.
What?
She has no escape.
Right. She has no escape.
He fled.
Right. At this point,
and you guys won't beat him until he says, "I'll divorce her out of my own free will."
You don't got the guy, you've got a real problem. Which is going on here. When you're done with it, you're with a very.
This is where the guy is in jail. They have the guy, and he's still.
Correct. In Israel, you've got those cases.
This case of a Yemenite guy.
Yeah.
He was in jail 20 years, and he did not give a get to his wife.
Right.
And now they have women in jail also who won't accept the get.
Mm-hmm. Crazy Jews.
And the Scotland case, how long has that? Has this been?
Probably like a year already.
Oh,
okay. I wouldn't say only.
It's a long time, but I thought it was going to be like 5 years.
Another attempt is something that New York State has, and that's called the get law. There are two get laws. There's what's called the 1980 get law, and there's what's called the 1992 get law.
Is that on here?
Yes. Number 16 is the 1980 get law. which says as follows, that in order to grant the divorce, there has to be a removal of barriers to marriage. So I gave you part of it. Any party to a marriage defined in subdivision 1 of this section who commences a proceeding to annul the marriage or for divorce must allege in his or her verified complaint that, to the best of his or her knowledge, that he or she has taken or that he or she will take prior to entry of the final judgment all steps solely within his or her power to remove any barrier to the defendant's remarriage following the annulment of divorce, or that the defendant has waived in writing the requirements of this subdivision. Meaning, that if a husband applies for a divorce in court, unless he gives a get, he's not getting a divorce. That's the upshot. Interesting, in 2012, the get rule was used against a Muslim man who wouldn't give his wife a religious divorce in New York. So, interesting enough, you can read through the most of the relevant stuff here. Now, this is a law in New York. This is the Domestic Relations Law number 253.
I like that.
The problem is, that's all good if he applies for divorce. If she applies for divorce, that's garnished help.
Without a paddle, right.
Right, that's right. So yeah, this was limited. That led to the 1992 law.
Is that 236?
236B5H. Which says as follows. In any decision made pursuant to this subdivision, the court shall, where appropriate, consider the effect of a barrier to remarriage, as defined by subdivision 6 of section 2, 153 of this article, on the fact that enumerated in paragraph D of this subdivision.
Which says what?
You don't know that?
In English, please, my wife.
It says as follows.
What does it say there?
When you go to the divorce court, among the interesting things they do is they divide the marital estate. So they have, you have certain assets as a couple. You have a house, you have a car, you have children, and basically you chop them all in half. That's how
it works.
The Solomonic. Right, you have two dogs. One gets half of this one and half of that one. One gets half of this one and half of that one.
Sounds fair.
Right? Okay. Right? The law says when the judge decides who gets what, the judge can decide if one party is stopping the other party from getting remarried. In the event that, even in the event that one party is doing that, the judge can determine that they will not divide everything 50-50, but give everything to the other party. Meaning, if man does not give get...
As an incentive?
What?
As an incentive?
It sounds like a fine, doesn't it? It
sounds like an incentive to me.
So this is a very, very halachically tricky law. So under the law of the state of New York, that means that if a man doesn't give a get, the judge has a right to take away the man's money.
And give it to her?
And give it to her.
Okay.
That's exactly.
Make sure.
So the get law of 1992, when it came out, was very, very controversial. There were people who got up and said as follows, that any get given in New York where this is invoked is no good. Other people said no. Any get where this could be invoked is no good because the man knows that she could do this. Some people say any get is not given in just in New York, but any person who could potentially get the case heard in New York
is no good.
Let's say he has a lot of money, he doesn't care about the money.
If he has a lot of money, then give it all to her so he doesn't care about the money?
No, I'm saying he has a lot of money. He doesn't care.
Yeah, but they're going to give it all to her. If he has a lot of, if he has no money, he doesn't care. If he has a lot of money, he cares a lot.
It's a random case. He doesn't care about his money.
Okay, the guy's poor. That's fine.
Even if he has, let's just see, he happens to
have. He's a monk.
He's a monk. He's a jerk.
He wants to go with the wealthy guy.
He inherited and he's a jerk. Sometimes I take my money. I don't want to be very
good.
Fine. Great. That's a possibility. He could do that. But the majority of people will care about their money.
Right. I'm not disagreeing.
Right. Again, it's like an Eretz Yisrael. Most people would rather give a get than go to jail. You'll get this one guy, he'll sit there for 20 years. Yeah. Free room and board. Living the life.
You don't call that mental illness?
Right. So, you know, great. Now he can't give a get. They'll have to help you work. So
they freed them after 20 years. They realized they couldn't keep him anymore because... went on like this every year.
But she's still alive
and died. No, again, I have to look it up. But you know what I think what happened?
What?
I think she died.
Maybe, but he was in jail for 20 years, and after that...
Right, she died.
Just so it's pointless to keep incarcerated.
Not if she's still Aguna. If she dies, okay.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah. I that was the unhappy ending to the story.
They're all bad.
Right, so... So this remains on the books in New York, these laws, and this is a far more questionable law. The 1980 law was limited in its effectiveness. No, it wasn't totally useless, but it was limited, and that in fact, however, it didn't make any troubles. The 92 law raised issues, but it is more effective. That's kind of
the 92 law is the.
Number 17 on the sheet.
Okay.
Right, so that's the story. Again, so these are the standard attempts. What I want to talk about next time is the newspapers always crop up with new Batei Din who are here to help the Agunas. And they have original ideas in ways that they could perhaps be helpful. Next week I would like to discuss those ideas and see whether in fact they are helpful or hurtful in the long run. Okay, and with that,
yes,
we'll figure
it
out.
Have it
Sunday night, God willing.
Yeah, you are?
No, actually, no. We're off next week.
Oh, right.
It's in 2 weeks from now.
Okay, two.
Right, next. Right, next week's is in 2 weeks from now.
I know this is a fictional case, but what was the final argument in that film that he finally? Do you remember?
1 second.
Okay. Why he finally?
She agreed not to get remarried. Wasn't that it?
In Philadelphia.
Yeah.
She 1 second.
She what? Wait, he's recording himself. So.